5. Holly Johnson's 5 o'clock case conference was allocated to the Chicago FBI office's third floor meeting room. This was a large room, better than 40 feet by 20, and it was more or less filled by a long, polished table flanked by 30 chairs, 15 on each side. The chairs were substantial and leather, and the table was made of fine hardwood, but any tendency for the place to look like a corporate boardroom was diffused by the scruffy government wall covering and the cheap carpet. There were 90 square yards of carpet on the floor, and the whole 90 together had probably cost less than just one of the chairs. 5 o'clock in the summer, the afternoon sun streamed in through the wall of windows and gave the people arriving in the room a choice. If they sat facing the windows, they got the sun in their eyes and squinted through the meeting and ended up with a blinding headache. And the sun overpowered the air conditioning. So if they sat backs to the window, they got heated up to a point where it got uncomfortable, and they started worrying about whether their deodorant was still okay at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. A tough choice, but the top option was to avoid the headache and take the risk of heating up. So the early attendees took the seats on the window side. First into the room was the FBI lawyer with special responsibility for financial crime. He stood for a moment and made a judgment about the likely duration of the meeting. Maybe 45 minutes, he thought, knowing Holly. So he turned and tried to assess which seat might get the benefit of the shade from the slim pillar splitting the wall of windows into two. The bar of shadow was lying to the left of the third chair in the row, and he knew it would inch toward the head of the table as time passed. So he spilled his pile of folders onto the table in front of the second chair and shrugged his jacket off and claimed the place by dropping it onto the chair. Then he turned again and strolled to the credenza at the end of the room for a cup of coffee from the filter machine. Next in were two agents working on cases that might be tied into the mess that Holly Johnson was dealing with. They nodded to the lawyer and saw the place he'd claimed. They knew there was no point in choosing between the other 14 chairs by the window. They were all going to get equally hot. So they just dumped their portfolios at the nearest two places and lined up for coffee.
"She not here yet?"
one of them said to the lawyer.
"Haven't seen her all day," the lawyer said.
"You're a loss, right?"
the other guy said. Holly Johnson was a new agent, but talented, and that was making her popular. In the past, the Bureau would have taken no pleasure at all in busting the sort of businessmen that Holly was employed to chase down, but times had changed, and the Chicago office had gotten quite a taste for it. The businessmen now looked like scumbags, not solid citizens, and the agents were sick and tired of looking at them as they rode the commuter trains home. The agents would be getting off the train miles before the bankers and the stockbrokers were anywhere near their expensive suburbs. They would be thinking about second mortgages and even second jobs, and they'd be thinking about the years of private detective work they were going to have to put in to boost up the mean government pension. And the executives would be sitting there with smug smiles. So when one or two of them started to take a fall, the Bureau was happy enough about it. When the ones and twos turned into tens and twenties and then hundreds, it became a blood sport. The only drawback was that it was hard work, probably more difficult to nail than anything else. That was where Holly Johnson's arrival had made things easier. She had the talent. She could look at a balance sheet and just know if anything was wrong with it. It was like she could smell it. She'd sit at her desk and look at the papers and cock her head slightly to one side and think. Sometimes she'd think for hours, but when she stopped thinking, she'd know what the hell was going on. Then she'd explain it all in the case conference. She'd make it all sound easy and logical, like there was no way anybody could be in any kind of doubt about it. She was a woman who made progress. She was a woman who made her fellow agents feel better on those commuter trains at night. That's what was making her popular. Fourth person into the third floor meeting room was the agent assigned to help Holly out with the fetching and carrying until she recovered from a soccer injury. His name was Milosevic. A slight frame, a slight West Coast accent. Less than 40, casually dressed in expensive designer khaki, gold at his neck and on his wrist. He was also a new arrival,
recently transferred into the Chicago office because that was where the Bureau found it needed its financial people. He joined the line for coffee and looked around the room.
She's late,
he said. The lawyer shrugged at him, and Milosevic shrugged back. He liked Holly Johnson. He had worked with her 5 weeks since the accident on the soccer field, and he had enjoyed every minute of it.
She's not usually late for anything, he said.
Fifth person in was Brogan, Holly's section head. Irish, from Boston, via California. The young side of middle age. Dark hair, red Irish face. A tough guy, handsomely dressed in an expensive silk jacket. Ambitious. He'd come to Chicago the same time as Milosevic, and he was pissed it wasn't New York. He was looking for the advancement he was sure he deserved. There was a theory that Holly's arrival in his section was enhancing his chances of getting it.
She's not here yet, he said.
The other four shrugged at him.
I'll kick her ass, Brogan said.
Holly had been a stock analyst on Wall Street before applying to join the FBI. Nobody was clear why she'd made the change. She had some kind of exalted connections and some kind of an illustrious father, and the easy guess was she wanted to impress him somehow. Nobody knew for sure whether the old guy was impressed or not, but the feeling was he damn well ought to be. Holly had been one of 10,000 applicants in her year, and she'd passed in right at the top of the 400 who'd made it. She'd creamed the recruitment criteria. The Bureau had been looking for college graduates in law or accountancy, or else graduates in flimsier disciplines who'd then worked somewhere for 3 years at least. Holly had qualified in every way. She had an accountancy degree from Yale and a master's from Harvard and 3 years on Wall Street on top of all that. She'd blitzed the intelligence tests and the aptitude assessments. She'd charmed the three serving agents who'd grilled her at the main interview. She'd sailed through the background checks, which was understandable on account of her connections, and she'd been sent to the FBI Academy at Quantico. Then she'd started to get serious. She was fit and strong. She learned to shoot. She murdered the leadership reaction course. She scored outstanding in the simulated shootouts in Hogan's Alley. But her major success was her attitude. She did two things at once. First, she bought into the whole Bureau ethic in the biggest way possible. It was totally clear to everybody that here was a woman who was going to live and die for the FBI. But second, she did it in a way which avoided the slightest trace of bullshit. She tinged her attitude with a gentle, mocking humor which saved people from hating her. It made them love her instead. There was no doubt the Bureau had signed a major new asset. They sent her to Chicago and sat back to reap the benefits. Last into the third-floor conference room was a bunch of men who came in together. 13 agents and the agent in charge, McGrath. The 13 agents were clustered around their boss, who was conducting a sort of rolling policy review as he walked. The 13 agents were hanging on to every word. McGrath had every advantage in the book. He was a man who'd been to the top and then come back down again into the field. He'd spent 3 years in the Hoover Building as an assistant director of the FBI, and then he'd applied for a demotion and a pay cut to take him back to a field office. The decision had cost him $10,000 a year in income, but it had bought him back his sanity, and it had bought him undying respect and blind affection from the agents he worked with. An agent in charge in a field office like Chicago is like the captain on a great warship. Theoretically, there are people above him, but they're all a couple of thousand miles away in Washington. They're theoretical. The agent in charge is real. He runs his command like the hand of God. That's how the Chicago office looked at McGrath. He did nothing to undermine the feeling. He was remote, but he was approachable. He was private, but he made his people feel he'd do anything at all for them. He was a short, stocky man, burning with energy, the sort of tireless guy who radiates total confidence, the sort of guy who makes a crew better just by leading it. His first name was Paul, but he was always called Mac, like the truck. He let his 13 agents sit down, 10 of them backs to the window, and 3 of them with sun in their eyes. Then he hauled a chair around and stuck it at the head of the table, ready for Holly. He walked down to the other end and hauled another chair around for himself, sat sideways on to the sun, started getting worried.
"Where is she?" he said.
"Brogan?" The section head shrugged, palms up. She should be here, far as I know, he said.
She leave a message with anybody? McGrath asked. Milosevic?
Milosevic and the other 15 agents and the bureau lawyer all shrugged and shook their heads. McGrath started worrying more. People have a pattern, a rhythm like a behavioral fingerprint. Holly was only a minute or two late, but that was so far from normal that it was setting the bells ringing. In 8 months, he had never known her to be late. It had never happened. Other people could be 5 minutes late into the meeting room and it would seem normal because of their pattern, but not Holly. At 5:03 in the afternoon, McGrath stared at her empty chair and knew there was a problem. He stood up again in the quiet room and walked to the credenza on the opposite wall. There was a phone next to the coffee machine. He picked it up and dialed his office.
Holly Johnson call in? He asked his secretary.
No, Mac,
she said. So he dabbed the cradle and dialed the reception counter, 2 floors below.
Any messages from Holly Johnson?
He asked the agent at the door.
No, Chief,
the agent said.
Haven't seen her.
He hit the button again and called the main switchboard.
Holly Johnson call in?
He asked.
No, sir,
the switchboard operator said. He held the phone and gestured for pen and paper. Then he spoke to the switchboard again.
Give me your pager number, he said. And her cell phone, will you?
The earpiece crackled, and he scrolled down the numbers. Cut the switchboard off and dialed Holly's pager. Just got a long, low tone telling him the pager was switched off. Then he tried the cell phone number. He got an electronic bleep and a recorded message of a woman telling him the phone he was dialing was unreachable. He hung up and looked around the room. It was 5:10, Monday afternoon.